You're listening to the Mumbrella Cast.
Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Damian Francis, and joining me to break down the week in media and marketing is Olivia Krimmel.
Hello, Damian.
Callum Jaspin.
Hi, Damian.
And Emma Shepherd.
Hello.
Later in the Mumbrella Cast, Olivia will be speaking to ANZ Senior Manager, Customer Centricity and Capability, Kate Young, about the transformation of the marketing function at ANZ.
And really saw a critical need to transform the marketing function.
Why scaling personalisation has become the key mission for the bank.
We're really on a mission at ANZ to ensure that we start to scale personalisation as a capability.
And how the business is future-proofing marketing staff to be top marketers.
You know, certainly what we know is that the profile of a top performing marketer is absolutely changing.
But first, the week's topics.
The ACCC's Digital Advertising Services Inquiry final report dropped. Just how damaging is Google's dominance in the ad tech supply chain?
Simon Ryan's RyanCap launches Tightrope in collaboration with Conrad Spilver and his Shadowboxer business, and
TikTok boosts its attempts to appeal to mainstream marketers with new products. But before we get into it,
this week's Mumbrella Cast is brought to you by Sesame. Being chased by the content beast? Get Sesame, the magic marketing platform that creates and shares branded content at scale in no time. Slaughter the content beast with Sesame now. Go to sesame.com, that's S-E-S-I-M-I.com.
Earlier this week, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission report into ad tech highlighted concerns and likely harms to publishers, advertisers and consumers as a result of Google's overwhelming dominance in the space. The report estimated that over 90% of ad impressions traded via the ad tech supply chain passed through at least one Google service and suggested there was a significant lack of transparency in the multiple areas, including pricing and operations. Emma, you reported on this on Tuesday. What new information came from this report and how significant are the findings?
Yes, so the report cited that Google's dominance in the ad tech supply chain is underpinned by multiple factors, including its access to consumer and other data, access to exclusive inventory, and integration across its ad tech services. Also key acquisitions by Google, including DoubleClick in 2007, AdMob in 2009, as well as YouTube in 2006, have helped Google entrench its position in ad tech. The report also stated that Google has used its position to preference its own services and shield them from competition. As an example, Google prevents rival ad tech services from accessing ads on YouTube, providing its own ad tech services with an important advantage. Google has also refused to participate in publisher-led header bidding, an industry innovation aimed at increasing competition for publishers' inventory, and previously allowed its services to have a last look opportunity to outbid rivals. However, earlier in the month, Google did say its data does not give an unfair advantage in the ad tech world. Google said its ad tech products have very limited use of individual user data from user-facing services when bidding for ads on third-party websites or apps.
Yeah, it was a 202-page report full of heaps and heaps of detail, but the reality is here that at the end of the day, there's a lot of recommendations being made to try and change how ad tech works, and of course, Google owns a large amount of the space at the moment, but let's be real about this. Liv, one for you. Does the ACCC really have the opportunity here to affect change in the ad tech space? You know, we are, after all, we're talking about Google, you know, the might of Google, which, you know, we've spoken about this before, has taken years and years, decades to build up what it has. Can the government actually do anything about this?
Yes, that's an interesting question, Damian. And I think you could look at this from two ways. I mean, firstly, we've seen the ACCC's news media and digital platforms bargaining code result in change in the market. Google and to a lesser degree Facebook have ended up paying millions and millions, we don't know the exact amount, but significant amount of money to publishers to placate them in regards to that. And so it is possible to say that through certain channels, the ACCC is able to influence market activity. On the flip side of that, though, is that the ACCC's mandate about competition and ensuring competition, which it begs to question, why was that not raised when these acquisitions by Google were made in the first instance, which in many cases is more than 10 years ago now? So it does sort of feel like they're playing catch up. And I think that this is going to be the challenge for the ACCC in terms of what they can actually do. Who are the, you know, viable competitors to raise up against Google? Because I can't think of any. And in that regard, it's also going to be interesting to see what levers the ACCC has in this space as well, because for the most part, we're talking about a global industry here. We're not just talking about an Australian-specific industry, and it's all virtual as well, which is the other key thing to keep in mind. So whether or not the ACCC and Rod Sims in particular likes what's happening is one thing, but whether or not they can actually do anything practical about it is quite the other. I think what we're more likely to see actually is the government use other levers at their disposal, such as tax, to level the playing field. The only other thing I could think of them doing in terms of, you know, really evening out the playing field would be to set quotas or to set minimums in terms of price. But that goes against the nature of a competitive marketplace. So not really sure what Sims has in mind, but at the moment all they've done is prove that Google is a one-stop shop for all your ad service needs.
Yeah, I've got this constant image now of an auctioneer bidding on an auction against themselves at the moment. I just can't get it out of my mind, probably because, you know, that's another big thing going on. Obviously, it's the property prices in Australia at the moment. But moving right along, because that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, they should really look at that. We need some more regulation there at the moment.
We need so much more regulation, so much more regulation. But like you say, maybe the horse has bolted just slightly on this one. But, hey, unsurprisingly, shock horror, the industry wasn't super shy on her comment about this one. The IAB and ADMA and a number of buyers came out with statements and thoughts as well. Emma, you covered a few of these. Any patterns in the comments? Anything interesting come to light?
Definitely. I spoke to IAB Australia's CEO, Gay Leroy. She said there were quite a few implications for many aspects of the ad tech sector. And the IAB looks forward, she says, to working constructively on behalf of the industry with government on the key issues it raises and continue to build confidence across the ad tech ecosystem. She said that ad tech industry is focused on consumer privacy and accountability in development of targeting, measurement and attribution solutions. I also spoke to ADMA's head of regulatory, Sala Fernando. She said the ad tech industry is a necessary stimulant to the entire Australian digital economy, be that consumers, advertisers and publishers. It's important that we do what we can to keep competitive and protect the consumer. ADMA advocates for responsible marketing that is fair and transparent, fostering consumer trust, healthy competition and innovation. She said, whilst the size of the players can sometimes give the perception that their power and skill leads to misuse, she does not believe this is automatically so.
Moving right along. Next up, we are going to be speaking about Simon Ryan and Conrad Spilvett. They are working together again. Simon Ryan's indie holding group, Ryan Cap, launched Tightrope this week with significant investment from his ex-Dentsu colleague, Conrad Spilver's Shadowboxer. The new business is advertised as a transformation consultancy and we'll see the pair working together again after significant rumors around a year ago that they may have been about to launch something then. Cal, it seemed like it was only going to be a matter of time before Ryan and Spilver joined forces. How did this one come about and what were the finer details?
As you mentioned there, Damo, Simon and Conrad do have a bit of history together. They were counterparts at Dentsu when Ryan was CEO of Carrot, and Simon was then Conrad's boss when he took on the CEO role of Dentsu Aegis Network, now known as Dentsu International, when Conrad was at Isobar. Conrad did reveal on the pod with yourself last year that he was approached or offered Simon's job when he left at the back end of 2018. Although his preference, I think, at the time was moving towards, he said to me when I spoke to him yesterday that his preference was really to work under a single brand. And I guess that eventuating in what is now Shadowbox was something a lot more appealing to him. The two are pretty close mates outside of just being colleagues. And I think they did discuss at some length a joint venture following their departures with, the potential of Spilver coming on board with Ryan Capp. However, both with their own ambitions, decided to do their own thing. And I did speak to both of them in the lead up to this podcast, as I said there. And the impression I got was this came about pretty organically. You know, the two meet up pretty regularly. And I think it kind of fit into what both of them were doing with their own businesses. When Shadowboxer was launched, Spilver also launched alongside that SB Ventures, which is the venture arm of his business. And the aim of that was for Shadowboxer to be able to have skin in the game, which was the term he used, with the businesses that they are working with. So, you know, I guess it shows that they've got an investment in the projects that they're working on and they were helping build. So Spilver told me yesterday that this is kind of directly focused on local businesses. So that's exactly what's happening here. And this is the first instance that SB Ventures has taken a stake in a service-based business, which is what Tightrope, the business that we're talking about here, is. So what they did here was they helped with the brand proposition, with the go-to-market strategy, and also in bringing in Stein de Vrijt, who is the who's going to be running the show here. And what will happen is Shadowboxer, when needed, will bring in its own capabilities and vice versa. And also is a minority stakeholder in the business while remaining. So Tightrope's a bit of a coming together of old Dentsu alumni, as I mentioned, with Spilver launching Shadowboxer with two ex-Isobar colleagues and also ex-Dentsu staff featuring pretty heavily at Ryan Capp's existing businesses, both Rival Media and Foxcatcher being led by ex-Dentsu leads, those being Joseph Pardillo and David Gaskell. As I mentioned, Stein de Vrijt, he comes across most recently from Accenture, where he was strategy director. From the sounds of it, getting him on board was a bit of a catalyst for the business to kind of come together and build around him of sorts. So, you know, there was the idea there, but then it was a bit of a coup getting Stein because from what I understand, he was about to be nabbed up by one of the big four consultancies. He was very close to signing up there. So yeah, getting him on board has really kind of pulled the thing together.
Yeah, and if there's anyone that knows full well what it takes to get a startup going in the Adland space, it's definitely Conrad Spilver. With Visual Jazz all these years ago, I believe, starting from his bedroom with a mate. So that was a pretty cool good news story from that side of things. But Ryan mentioned as well that this was sort of the missing piece of the puzzle with Ryan Capp, which has already sort of got tentacles in a few different areas. But what exactly does he mean by that, Cal, the missing piece of the still relatively young Ryan Capp business?
So when Ryan started up Ryan Capp last year, he said he was quite specific in the aims of what he wanted for the business. So that was the aim of building an Australian holding company with three core capabilities. And those have been focused on tech, data, and media, saying that he wanted to help businesses who want to thrive in the digital economy. And now alongside the digital marketing and media agency, Rival Media, as I mentioned, and also Foxcatcher, which is focused on marketing data and tech, he's really kind of built out those three core capabilities as he promised to do so. So I think the aim of this as a consultancy is to draw on both these established businesses while also getting some of Shadowbox's expertise. And this is sort of part of what he referred to me as a grand plan or also a five-year plan, which does focus on these three areas. And now that he's got those, I think what he really wants to do is just focus on expanding them in three core markets, those being Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane. So the Sydney office is imminent. I don't believe that is so much of a secret as it is just waiting for things to open up. He said when we spoke the other day that he didn't want to be like other parent companies growing out 20 or so businesses over several years and then subsequently spending several years winding them back. Don't know if this was a potential dig at his ex-employer, but who knows. And you'd like this one, Damo. He also joked that calling this the final piece in the Ryan Cap puzzle, would be like an F1 driver saying it's his last race.
Yeah, I do like that one. I'd love to know which F1 driver specifically he's referring to in that case. But look, a good question to end off here, and you might have a bit of information on this one. I guess if I was chatting to Simon, one of the first questions I would have asked personally would have been, what exactly is a business transformation consultancy? You know, maybe I'm being a bit basic here, but it sounds like a lot of buzzwords. What did he tell you about that?
So Spilver actually said to me that Ryan was pretty adamant that he wanted to launch this as part of the Ryan Cap strategy, and that being business consultancies focused around business and technology transformation. So as I mentioned there, that falls into that plan with having a consultancy in the digital services marketing area. And Tightrope is essentially business strategy for that economy and a go-to location for businesses that want to thrive in that specific economy. Ryan called it a new type of consultancy, taking the best of the consulting and agency models and putting it into a single proposition and really kind of playing up on Stein's traditional strategic capabilities and integrating that into the kind of established agency knowledge. So I guess in some ways it is sort of similar to Shadowboxer, and in some way, and also Spilver said to me yesterday, he said, you know, this could have been us. So, but, you know, I think Shadowboxer, the way they have gone, is very much focused on venture creation and the building out of brand strategy and design capability, as well as kind of offering tech and business consulting. So the nature of this being a consultancy means that Ryan couldn't really share too much about what that means client side, but he also said they're working with some pretty recognizable brands, and everything that they do is going to be bespoke. So hopefully that clears up a little bit, but I remain a little bit confused also.
Coming up next, we're going to take a quick look at TikTok as it launches a new brand experience and tries to appeal to marketers. TikTok went to market this week with its first TikTok World, a showcase of new products it hopes will push brands and marketers to embrace the platform to connect with its audiences. It included initiatives like TikTok Creator Marketplace, a self-serve portal that provides brands with access to a variety of creators. Emma, you spoke with TikTok's general manager in Australia and New Zealand, Brett Armstrong. What did he have to say about the various things that they were launching?
I did indeed. Brett said that TikTok has now really become established as a mainstream marketing platform in Australia and New Zealand. He's seen advertisers from sectors spanning from finance, media, tech, retail, beauty, you know, really collaborating closely with TikTok to really drive innovation and creativity in the industry locally. He did say that he's seen a lot of large-scale brands advertise on the platform, you know, including the Macca's 50th birthday, you know, what they did on the platform, which was amazing. And brands like Athlete's Foot, Mecca, and Afterpay have stretched that platform to develop bespoke campaigns that meet their needs as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's unsurprising that TikTok would throw in some big names and drop some campaign pointers and things like that. I guess in a diverse media market like we have, it's unsurprising in a sense to see big brands dip their toe in and try new platforms and try to gain new followers on different platforms in different areas. But I guess the important thing here, particularly for TikTok, is how those brands and the media agencies that are representing them see what TikTok is doing and relate to it. So, you know, I understand you spoke with a few media buyers as well, Wave Makers, head of content and partnerships, Shivani Maharaj, and Digitas's head of social, Ashley Bruton. What were their thoughts on this? Were they sharing, I guess, the same enthusiasm that Armstrong was clearly sharing for it?
Yeah, definitely. I think the two big things that Shivani said she took out of the TikTok world presentation was very much around the shopping side and the creative side. From the shopping aspect, Shivani said it's almost the same as what Instagram has done with its shopping product, but putting it obviously in the TikTok environment. The general vibe I'm getting from most people in the industry is that everyone is just, you know, was just kind of waiting for TikTok to release these products, and it wasn't surprising that that was its next move. Shivani said for her client L'Oreal in particular, she sees TikTok's new products as almost a game changer, especially that they can sell the product directly to the consumer. And then Ashley also said that the number one thing that she's seeing at the moment is these products that TikTok has launched far outweigh any sort of integrations with any other social platforms, in the fact that it's essentially an all-in-one service. She said that creator marketplace makes it really easy to be able to find a really diverse variety of creators, especially when you look at the strength of the platform. You know, it's such a diverse platform with all sorts of different content. This, she said, was one of the biggest issues with other competitors' platforms. It cuts out the need for any third-party influencer sourcing apps that have been around for obviously years that's no longer needed. Another big benefit she's seeing that's worth noting with a lot of her larger clients is TikTok's elevation of its reporting metrics. She said back in the day, TikTok really was lacking in reporting and measurement, but now with the integration of the likes of Kantar and Nielsen, as well as DoubleVerify, there's just a lot more options now for larger clients that require some of these functionalities.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot going on around TikTok at the moment, not least the somewhat hilarious articles that seem to be popping up about Donald Trump trying to convince Microsoft to buy TikTok while he was president of the United States. But that is a completely different story, just some interesting reading that you might find while you may be looking at other TikTok marketing content. But coming up next, Olivia is going to speak to ANZ's Kate Young.
Joining us on the Mumbrella Cast today is Kate Young, Senior Manager, Customer Centricity and Capability at ANZ. Kate, welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
Firstly, Kate, can I start off with a quick query about your role and what it entails, and then also how you came to be in the role?
Yeah, thank you very much. So my role is really focused on building capability for our marketing function, and that's across our entire enterprise. So the role has responsibility across our Australia business, our institutional banking business, and our New Zealand banking business. And really it's about taking a step back and saying, what are the critical capabilities that are required for ANZ marketing to be seen as a modern day commercially minded function? And also, how are those capabilities playing a critical role in driving more customer-centric outcomes? So that's really what the role is focused on. I started in this role back in 2019, and it was a newly created role at the time under our CMO, Shweta Mehra. And really, she, I guess, came into the bank, you know, ex-Procter & Gamble, and really saw a critical need to transform the marketing function and to have it be much more insight led and data-led and much more of a strategic function. And so with that in mind, you know, she established this team and I was lucky enough to apply for the role and to be successful in heading up this this team. And it's been a great journey over the last 2.5 years.
And so given that the aim of the team is to make marketing more strategic and more valued within the organization, given the 18 months that we've had and obviously very difficult, challenging market conditions, what has been some of the, I suppose, significant challenges or opportunities that the marketing function has seen at ANZ during that period?
I mean, look, it certainly has been a challenging, 18 months. I mean, not just for ANZ, but I think for all organisations. And I think the ones that have really thrived and succeeded during this time are the ones that have taken a step back and really focused on the customer. So I was just sort of talking about the fact that the role that I have in capability building is actually all focused around making sure that the marketing effort we direct, is more tailored and more customer-centric and delivering for our customers. With that in mind, the last 18 months has really given us an opportunity to put our money where our mouth is. So, we've been able to really think about what are the things that are going to be essential in helping our customers through this period. And for us, our purpose, is really at ANZ, is about helping people and communities thrive. And how that manifests from a customer centricity or a marketing perspective is really around financial well-being. So we've had a real opportunity over the last 18 months to put in place a number of initiatives that are really focused on making sure that our customers have the best level of financial well-being possible and that they are better off banking with us than with any other financial service provider.
And how does the marketing function in particular assist in that endeavour?
So we've been working through a number of initiatives. I mean, from its simplest form, it could be helping people with mortgage relief. It could be delaying payments so that people, don't have as many financial commitments if potentially people are between jobs or out of work. So we've put in place a number of things around rate reductions, mortgage relief, delayed payments, just a number of things to really make sure that our customers are able to get through this period. But there's also a number of other initiatives that we're putting in place, as I said, around financial well-being. So helping our customers really understand, I guess, by taking some surveys or going through some diagnostic tools, where they sit on a scale of financial well-being and putting in place some practical suggestions that might help them actually achieve a better level of financial well-being in the future.
And is ANZ utilising any external agencies as part of that, you mentioned earlier transformation? How important are those external agencies when it comes to implementing these initiatives and campaigns?
Look, so we have a number of agencies obviously on our panel that provide tremendous support to the team in terms of how we go to market. So, I wouldn't say that we are relying on them differently in the last 18 months to what we have done previously. But certainly we look at our agencies as partners, as extended members of the team, and they play a critical role in helping us, not only from a strategic perspective, but also from a go-to-market perspective.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned earlier about customer care and that real focus on the customer. A big part about what we're hearing at the moment is obviously about first-party data and the importance and growth of using that data about customers to better service them. What's the approach at ANZ to that at the moment, and what changes or initiatives are underway to improve or expand that?
Well, obviously, the entire industry is going through a dramatic change as it relates to how we use data. So, we're not alone, we're not isolated. Everybody is having to pivot and change their strategies around their use of data and how that's used to go to market. So we don't feel as though we're not at a competitive disadvantage in terms of the changes that are afoot. But of course, like everybody, it has required us to pivot and to think differently about the use of data, how we collect it, and how specifically it's used to ensure that we are delivering the most appropriate solutions for our customers. We're really, on a mission at ANZ to ensure that we start to scale personalisation as a capability, and marketing's certainly playing a critical role in championing that transition. So, that I guess ambition and that project that we're working on around personalisation almost goes hand in hand with some of the changes that are happening more broadly around the use of data. So it's kind of quite fortunate in some elements in that as we start to think about personalization and the role that that can play in driving better outcomes for customers that we're actually able to think through that at the same time as more broader industry changes are afoot.
Yeah, you mentioned there the broader industry changes, and obviously there's been a lot of dialogue and discussion about third-party data, et cetera, which we won't go into because that could take up the entire podcast. But just on, I guess, on a bank level, how significant is that to ANZ, and also how is ANZ balancing those needs for obviously commercial outcomes but then the customer needs as well when it comes to data?
Look, it's a great question, and I think, you know, banking's really fortunate because we have such rich data, which means that if we're actually really capable and really proficient at using it, we can be really smart about the way we target customers, but also the way we better understand them and their needs to anticipate those needs and deliver better experiences, better services, better products and propositions, you know, for them. So I think that the banking industry, as I said, is in a really fortunate position and that it is so data rich and that it can operate like that. But I'm just sort of going to go take a step back and think about your question around sort of that balance between customer centricity and commerciality, because I think probably in the past, and I'm going back quite a long time, you know, the banking industry or indeed, you know, other industries might have felt that the two were somewhat mutually exclusive. We don't operate like that at all. We know that if we are actually delivering the best solutions for our customers, we are better understanding our customers and we're better able to deliver solutions for them, that the commerciality comes naturally. So for us, the two are not incongruent. We don't look at one and say, if we deliver this for the customer, we're it's at the trade-off of commerciality. We don't look at it like that at all. We say, if we do this for the customer and we're doing the right thing for the customer, we know naturally the commercials will follow.
Interesting. And I noticed in a report that you published late last year about the future of marketing, you said that customers in the future will rely on AI and intermediaries for purchase decisions increasingly in the future. How important is something like AI at the bank in terms of, again, delivering on some of those initiatives?
Look, really important. As I mentioned, you know, we have a number of projects underway at the moment around how we are thinking through the use of MarTech and indeed AI and machine learning in the future and how we will be able to deliver and scale personalization as a capability. The report that you're referring to was actually a really important piece of research that I embarked on last year. And the reason behind that, if I can just take a step back, is because my role, as I mentioned, is really about thinking through what are the critical customer-centric capabilities that are required to be a modern-day commercially-minded function. But the reality is marketing and indeed the world in general is not static. In fact, we are moving into one of the most rapid periods of change that we have ever seen. And so for us, it wasn't just about saying, well, you know what, we've got a fantastic program in place that's helping build capability for our marketers today. It was also about us taking a step back and saying, what are those critical capabilities going to look like in the future? And how are we almost putting in place a two-speed strategy that says, we've got today sorted out. We're helping our marketers be terrific in the role they have today and for the world that we're operating in today. But more importantly, how are we making sure that we understand what the next 2, 3, 5 years looks like? What is that roadmap? And how are we putting in place reskilling and upskilling programs to ensure our marketers are able to respond at that point in time? And that's the world, Olivia, that you're talking about, which is where there is vastly more data and information available to customers. And quite frankly, you know, customers will actually have probably more knowledge, data and information at their hands than will companies. And so that's where the world of AI and indeed intermediaries starts to play a really important role, because with that overload of data and information, as we know, it's the paradox of choice, almost to some extent, it creates complexity. So we will start to see when that world starts to become more normalized, that people will start to use AI and indeed intermediaries to help them with their decision-making choices. And they will start to delegate some of that decision-making within that path to purchase in some cases almost automatically as well. So that's where it's really important for us as we're scaling personalization to be thinking about what that future looks like so that we can be prepared for it.
Predicting the next 12 months is a very challenging endeavor at the moment for any organization, given the environment we're in, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne. Mm. So I'm sure that there is plenty of work happening behind the scenes on that.
Absolutely.
Just on that, you mentioned obviously upskilling marketers within the organization. And I understand that you're also involved in a marketing master's program within the bank. Would you be able to tell me a little bit about that, why it's been implemented, and what outcomes you've had to date with that program?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, as I mentioned at the start of this discussion, I started in this role about two and a half years ago. And really what I came into was, I guess, an enterprise from a marketing perspective that was operating from a capability perspective quite inconsistently. So some divisions had certain capability frameworks in place, others didn't. There wasn't really any consistent way of approaching capability uplift. And what we were hearing from our employees was some dissatisfaction around how they navigate their career at ANZ, or maybe not dissatisfaction, maybe uncertainty or a lack of clarity. And they were saying, you know what, ANZ is such a terrific place to work, but I'm just really having a hard time working out how I grow, how I develop, what I should be focused on, and potentially even what my career path is into the future. And so when we took a step back, we realized that what we needed to do was to build a program that was going to be enterprise-wide that really addressed that feedback from our employees. And that's really how Marketing Masters was established. We first of all went out and sought to understand global best practice around what were modern day commercially minded marketing functions grounded in, what were those critical customer centric capabilities, and what were the things that we needed to put in place at ANZ to ensure that we were going to be at the forefront of best and next practice. And so at the backbone, I guess, of Marketing Masters is a capability framework. And that capability framework consists of 19 capabilities that span everything from insight generation all the way through strategic planning and prioritization and then into execution. But more importantly, what we do is we've turned that framework into a program, and it's an annual program. So every year at the start of our financial year, we ask every marketer to undertake what we call a My Mastery Review, which is basically a self-reflection of their level of mastery on a three-point scale across those 19 capability areas. At the end of that process, a report is generated, which actually compares the expectations of their role with the way that they have assessed themselves. And that allows them to see both positive and developmental deviations. And that gives them a really clear idea of the one or two capabilities that they need to focus on in the year ahead to be terrific in the role they have today. So that's really essential, because that's creating that clarity and that transparency around all of that, those insights or those challenges that our employees were facing into, and saying, you know what, in the role you have today, it's these two things. In the year ahead, all you need to do is focus on these two things. What's really clever about that tool is what sits in the background, which is a ginormous spreadsheet, which basically has every single marketing role across the entire enterprise mapped. So that basically by an expectation. So that's what creates that comparison for people. What we're actually doing this year, which is really neat, is we've created a curriculum-based diagnostic tool. So at the end of that report, not only will they know the one or two capabilities they need to focus on, we will also give them a suggested curriculum of what they should be doing in the next 12 months to actually build mastery in the capabilities they're focused on. So long answer to your question, but there's so much to talk about when it comes to the capability programs we have at the bank that we've developed. But hopefully that gives you a little bit of a taste of what the program's all about.
Yes, that sounds fascinating, and obviously great to hear of an organization investing so much in its marketing function and the individuals within it. Just on that, you mentioned obviously going off and the curriculum aspect. Is that predominantly then done also in-house within ANZ, or do you tap external providers as well to assist in those curriculums?
So we have a blended approach, so we offer both. The internal programs that we run are under an academy that we call our Brand Academy. So that's also a program that's run by myself and the team. And the Brand Academy is basically us pulling together a curriculum that focuses on what we call the ANZ way. So not only are we focused on core customer-centric capabilities, but we also build in a process that we expect ANZ marketers, and indeed those beyond marketers, so our data teams, our technology teams, anybody involved in the process, to be able to understand and implement in their job. So we're teaching people the knowledge. We're also building skill in those workshops. So they are application-led workshops. We are teaching a process, and we're also providing useful tools and frameworks that they can take back to their job. So that's sort of one component. That's sort of the workshop piece that we build ourselves internally. We don't build them for every single capability, every single one of the 19 capabilities. The ones that we don't have an academy workshop for, we support with a variety of self-directed learning content through a variety of partners that we have. So that might be different types of, you know, short to long form content, webinars, case studies, short form courses, etc. And we house it in what we call the My Mastery Library. So people can go onto our learning platform, they can look up the capability that they're wanting to focus on, and there's a whole library of curated content available for them to undertake in a self-directed fashion.
That sounds great. Very, very user-friendly for your team. And just looking ahead, I suppose, given that the bank has invested so much time and effort, and obviously your research as well is looking at what it takes to be best in class, not only now but also in the future. What do you see as perhaps some of those key opportunities for the marketing function looking ahead at the next 12 to 18 months for an organisation such as ANZ?
Yeah, look, a couple of things that I'd like to talk about. So, you know, certainly what we know is that the profile of a top performing marketer is absolutely changing. So there's going to be a much greater focus on marketers who can blend, I guess, what traditionally has been called soft skills. We'll probably call them non-technical skills, because I think soft sometimes downplays those. So things like creativity, adaptability, resilience, innovation, empathy, ethics, those type of capabilities with new technical skills. So really improving sort of data and technology literacy. So certainly the way we believe marketing will go to market in the future is through cross-functional multidisciplinary teams that would be made up of traditional marketers, technology folk and data folk. And we believe our marketers will get a little bit closer to the data and tech teams. Our tech and data people will get a little bit closer to the marketing teams. But in order to be a successful marketer in the future, it really is about a balance of left and right brain thinking. So that's going to be critical, and that's sort of the skills that we are starting to focus on in terms of programs we are looking to build as we start to go on that future roadmap, or implement that future roadmap rather.
Interesting. And are there any key, I suppose, activities from a marketing perspective that you in particular are excited about or really looking forward to working on in the next 12 to 18 months?
So, Olivia, when you say activities, are you meaning sort of campaigns or initiatives, or are you meaning
an initiative, or it could be a campaign specifically?
Look, I think, you know, what's been exciting for us, as I sort of mentioned at the, you know, at the start of this call, is really around the work that we are doing on financial wellbeing. I mean, we, I think, are really pioneering, or at least differentiating ourselves in a non-differentiated market with our, you know, brand strategy around financial wellbeing. We have a number of exciting projects in the pipeline as we continue to evolve that offering for our customers. And I think certainly, you know, as we start to become more data literate as marketers, and we start to understand our customers even more and be able to deliver personalization or even anticipation at scale, you know, we're going to be able to take that strategy to the next level. So I think for us, without sort of giving too much away, there's a number of things in the pipeline that we'll be focused on really accelerating what we're doing in that space.
And in terms of, you know, other organisations, if they were thinking about following a similar path to ANZ in terms of upskilling and future-proofing their marketing divisions, is there any advice or any tips you would give in terms of embarking on that or the importance of that?
I think, You know, what's really underpinned our program and what I believe has made us really successful is the fact that we really take a research approach to how we build our capability program. So we are constantly, constantly looking at global best practice, understanding what has worked for some of the best of the best. So when we start to, you know, implement or think about how we mature or expand or evolve our programs, we go out and we do a bunch of research and we look at big organizations that have really established capability programs. So people like Unilever, people like Shell, people like P&G. And we take a step back and we say, what's worked for them and why? What lessons can we learn from them? And what are the things as a result of that that should form part of our roadmap into the future? So I think that that's a really critical discipline and something that I would recommend anybody who's embarking on this type of work to think about doing. But more importantly, I think, is the emphasis on the future. And it's really interesting. I was actually reading, I'm just going to go off track for a moment and then I'll come back and finish the answer to your question. But I was reading a really interesting article from Innovation Oz on LinkedIn a few days ago. And they were using an example from a Hemingway novel called The Sun Also Rises. And in that novel, they ask the main character how he goes bankrupt. And he says, gradually and then suddenly. And so not that I'm wanting to talk about Hemingway or novels or bankruptcy, but this concept of gradually and then suddenly, I think, is a really, really salient point. And the reason being is because what is going to happen really, really quickly is that the capabilities that we have focused on building today, I don't want to say they will become redundant, but they will need to be evolved and iterated on very quickly. And so my advice to anybody embarking on a capability program today would be to be very aware of how suddenly the world of marketing is going to change and the requirements of a marketer are going to change. So I would be encouraging them to almost be building a program that is focused on going to market in 2 or 3 years' time as opposed to something that would be relevant for today, would be my strongest advice.
I think that's a lovely analogy you gave there from Hemingway. It's, you know, suddenly is very much in vogue at the moment. Things seem to happen very suddenly or not at all. So I think that's very wise words. Well, Kate, thank you so much for joining us on the Mumbrella Cast. Really appreciate your insights and look forward to seeing what else we get from ANZ in the future on the marketing front.
Thanks so much for having me. I've enjoyed the conversation.
Cheers.
And that's it for this week. Thanks again to our sponsor, Sesame, and a big thank you to Callum, Emma, and Liv for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Damo.